The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
So we're going to ask you to just remain in meditation as I offer the first part of a talk, and David will be offering the second half of this morning's talk. And we have agreed to talk about a case that we hope touches you the way it touched the four of us, because it has to do with sickness and healing. And in this time, with, of course, coronavirus, and also our awareness of so much suffering, we call it the pandemic of racism in our dedication, so much sickness in the world. And so this exploration of this together. So this is from the Book of Serenity, alternately translated the Book of Equanimity. It's case number 83. I'm reading it today from the Book of Equanimity, but we may hear a different, slightly different translation the next time. It's called Dogo's Nursing. Preface to the Assembly. The whole body is ill. Vimalakirti is hard to cure. This grass is the medicine, and Manjushri uses it well. Isn't it wonderful to encounter and grasp a man facing the ultimate and obtain this place of peaceful ease? Main case. Attention. Isan asked Dogo, "Where have you been?" Dogo said, "I've been nursing the sick." Isan said, "How many people were sick?" Dogo replied, "Some are sick, some are not." Isan pursued, "Isn't it you who's not sick?" Dogo responded, "Sickness and non-sickness have nothing to do with it. Speak quickly, speak quickly." Isan remarked, "Even being able to say it misses it entirely." Appreciatory verse. Marvelous medicines never touched his lips. A divine doctor never had to take his pulse. Seeming to exist, he's not nothing. Being utterly empty, he's not something. Unextinguished, he's born. Undestroyed, he lives eternally. He even goes utterly before the ancient Buddhas and walks alone among the empty kalpas. Being quiet, heaven covers, earth supports. Being active, the crow flies, the rabbit runs. So there's a lot to explore in this case, of course. Our work here is touching the heart mind, really exploring what comes alive for us as we hear these words. I wanted to offer a tiny bit of background about the preface to the assembly. It begins, "The whole body is ill. Vimalakirti is hard to cure." So this is a reference to a sutra, the Vimalakirti Sutra. And I found a part of it that I really think is relevant to this discussion. I want to read it for you. The Buddha asked Manjushri to visit Vimalakirti because he heard that Vimalakirti was sick. Manjushri was intimidated by visiting this great master of the way. So Vimalakirti was a lay practitioner, and yet in many respects he would often win in, you know, these Dharma dialogues. He would win in Dharma combat against many of Buddha's monks. So they were intimidated by him. But still, Manjushri did go to visit Vimalakirti, and he asked, "Good sir, is your condition tolerable? Is it livable?" Vimalakirti responded, "Manjushri, my sickness comes from ignorance and thirst for existence, and it will last as long as do the sicknesses of living beings. We're all living beings to be free. Were all living beings to be free from sickness, I also would be free of sickness. For example, Manjushri, when the only son of a merchant is sick, both his parents become sick on account of the sickness of their own son. And the parents will suffer as long as that only son does not recover from his sickness. Just so, Manjushri, the Bodhisattva loves all living beings as if each were his only child. He becomes sick when they are sick and is cured when they are cured. You asked me, Manjushri, whence comes my sickness? The sickness of the Bodhisattva arises from great compassion." I want to pause in this moment to acknowledge that Manjushri's sickness is not a sickness of saying, "Oh, those poor other people." Manjushri also becomes sick. "I am also sick," he says. Note the lack of separation there. Manjushri says, "How should a bodhisattva console another bodhisattva who is sick?" And Vimalakirti responds, "He should encourage his empathy for all living beings on account of his own sickness. His remembrance of suffering experienced from beginningless time, and his consciousness of working for the welfare of living beings. He should encourage him not to be distressed, but to manifest the roots of virtue, to maintain primal purity and the lack of craving, and thus to always strive to become the greatest healer who can cure all sicknesses." What an exhortation from Vimalakirti to Manjushri. Become the greatest healer who can cure all sicknesses. And here is an entry point for us as we begin the exploration of this koan. What is the greatest healer? What is Vimalakirti encouraging us to become? Remembering that just like Vimalakirti, we are also the sickness. We are the sickness and we are the cure simultaneously. So to come to the case, a reminder of the language from the specific case here. Attention. Isan asked Dogo, "Where have you been?" Dogo said, "I've been nursing the sick." Isan said, "How many people were sick?" Dogo replied, "Some are sick, some are not." Isan pursued, "Isn't it you who's not sick?" Dogo responded, "Sickness and non-sickness have nothing to do with it. Speak quickly." Isan remarked, "Even being able to say it misses entirely." And again, this invitation for us as a koan to drop into our practice. What is it to be sick? What is it to be the greatest healer? Who is sick? So these are the questions that arise as we begin. These are some of the questions that arise that are brought forth by this koan. Our bodhisattva way is about recognizing the suffering in the world, recognizing the suffering in ourselves, and about becoming the great healer. What is the great healer? And with that, I pass it to David.
So the Buddha often referred to himself as a physician. Once one of his disciples was sick, and Buddha sent him medicine, and the medicine was the teaching of the seven factors of awakening. I have a dear friend who is always quite worried about her health. One time I explained to her that there was a new disease that had been discovered, and the mortality rate is 100%. This disease has no symptoms other than life itself. And the disease, of course, is being alive. We know that it is not going to end well. Or we might say, it is not going to end as the little self would like it. Sometimes we feel good, sometimes we feel bad. Sometimes things last for a long time. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Sun-faced Buddha lives for thousands of kalpas. A moon-faced Buddha lives for a single night. And we too are woven into this life and death here in this very moment, and all of us asking, what shall I do? And the wonderful question, these are Dharma brothers who are speaking, both students of Baijiang. And in Chinese, we just heard the Japanese names. In Chinese, their names are Guishan and Daowu. And they are playing with each other. This kind of Dharma play, rubbing up against each other, trying to clarify this great matter. And so Guishan says, where have you been? Quite a wonderful question for any of us. Where have you been? Where have you been all your life? What are you up to? What do you care about? These wonderful questions that sometimes are so troublesome. But the opportunity we have here to investigate deeply these questions in this brief life, and even if you live 100 years, it will be a brief life. This flashing of light in the stream. So you should view this fleeting world, goes the end of the Diamond Sutra, a flickering lamp, a phantom, a flash of lightning in the summer sky. And here we are in this moment. here this quite warm moment in Worcester, Massachusetts. And how is it right where you are? And Dao Wu replies, I've been nursing the sick. I've been tending the sick. And what a wonderful framing of our bodhisattva vows. Zen, of course, is part of the Mahayana stream of Buddhism. And the great innovation of the Mahayana is this idea, the centrality of this idea, that we do not sit to become enlightened ourselves, and that there is no such thing as individual enlightenment, given that we are woven together, that there is no such thing as a single life, only the life of all things. And there are no human beings that are separate from the grass and the chipmunks and the birds and the fish. All of us intertwinkling, supporting and being supported by each other. And so when Vimalakirti said, I am sick because others are sick. This is true. This is our life. And when we touch this, or when this touches us, this bottomless suffering and pain of the world, the cruelty that is woven into the very institutions that we call our country, this system that supports us all, that we are all a part of. I am sick. I am hurting. I am in being hurt as each other person is being hurt. And so Dao Wu says, I have been tending the sick. And this activity of tending, we were speaking about it in our home practice dialogue this morning. This wonderful Samu practice and the wonderful Zen practice of taking care of things. Each bowl, each kitchen floor, each bed is the Buddha himself, the Buddha herself. It is our very life, and that we human beings are actually hardwired to tend to each other, to tend to the world around us. And this tending, as someone was saying this morning, not out of obligation or because my mother or father said I had to do it, or the mean Zen teacher, or the mean Tanto. Zen teachers are very kind. It's the Tantos that are mean. She said I had to do it. He said I had to do it. This is not the way that when we give ourselves to the activity of tending, we find that everything we do becomes ourself, and then not easy and not hard, but we encounter ourself. And then Guishan said, how many people were sick, tempting his Dharma brother to keep score? Well, I've helped four people this morning, I'm a good person because, like Samson, my room is the same state. So I cleaned my room this morning. So I deserve merit. But in this activity of Zen, in this intimacy of caring for others as self, seeing the self as other and other as the self, there is no possibility of keeping score. Just this moment, right here. So I'll just repeat the main case with the Chinese names of these Dharma brothers. Attention, Guishan asked Dao Wu, where have you been? Dao Wu said, I've been nursing the sick. Guishan said, how many people were sick? Dao Wu replied, some are sick, some are not. Guishan pursued, isn't it you who's not sick? Dao Wu responded, sickness and non-sickness have nothing at all to do with it. Speak quickly, speak quickly. Guishan remarked, even being able to say it misses entirely. Thank you. So please sit comfortably, and we'll have a Dharma dialogue. And please raise your Zoom hand, and I'll call on you, and Mike and I responding? Yeah.
We only have time.
Yeah, so we'll have maybe 10 minutes, so just a few. So, Nat.
This is a wonderful, wonderful koan for me to just be with. What came up for me, especially in the context of trying to be with the world I'm in, is how can I heal the sick if I don't have some healing myself? If I have healing of my sickness, then almost anything I do, whether it's large or small, will convey healing. At the same time, how can I heal the sick if I'm not sick myself?
Yeah.
So I, holding both of those at the same time,
yeah,
is just something I have to let percolate. And the only other thing I want to say quickly is that I hear when Guishan says sickness and not sickness has nothing to do with it. It sounds like people who are saying now all lives matter. In other words, it's not about being sick or not sick. It's about we're all together. We really should be healing everybody. And I feel like the reply to that is, you may say so, but it misses the point right now.
Yeah, right.
You can say so, but maybe it's better not to say that right now. We know it's true, but the way to communicate that is by saying Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
You don't have to say this other thing.
Yeah.
And that came up for me during the call.
And I love both of those points, Nat, that and Mike read that wonderful passage from Vimalakirti about both I'm sick because others are sick and others are sick because I'm sick. This identity must be healed in order to heal the world. Must be sick in order to meet the sickness of the world. And then the second point about not getting lost in oneness, this pernicious oneness that says, oh, there is no color, there is no difference. Maybe true, but also misses the point, misses the particularity. So thank you. Adam and Lori? Or one or both?
Thank you. I've been, the one line up from the koan that really brought up a lot for me was this line, it has nothing to do with sickness or not sickness. I forget the actual wording.
Yeah.
But for me, what that was bringing up was this very confusing rub of happiness and joy in the middle of something so crazy and painful. And I don't feel like I'm turning away. This is not what that feeling of joy and happiness is coming from. It's very strange and confusing and hard to articulate, but I feel like it has something to do with how people are, how I am connecting with other people in a very different way, how I'm finding myself willing to be really uncomfortable with conversations, and how somehow that feels rich and good and correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So, you know, for me, this case is, you know, the mind dividing good from bad, sick from health. And it's an invitation to turn toward things exactly as they are. And the mind will tell me that something is good or that it is bad. But there's also a current that is running deeper than either of those labels. And it's not that those labels are wrong, but it's that there's also something very mysterious going on somehow beneath the surface of all my labels. I might think that something is uncomfortable or that something is a problem. But as you say, when I enter into the aliveness of that experience itself, it's quite mysterious. The label uncomfortable, the label good, the label bad is not enough. It's not, again, not that it's wrong, but it's somehow insufficient. And I think in our practice, we're invited to this mysterious exploration, right? This looking deeply into the very things that we may fear, the very things that we may want to turn away from. And some of these things may feel quite hazardous, especially in, you know, these times where we're having some of these powerful and challenging conversations, but to be willing to turn toward the mystery of it, to acknowledge even those of us who are experts, the most well-researched experts, to acknowledge that there's something even deeper than anything that I know.
Yeah. Brad.
Well, David, I liked your anecdote about your friend being maybe hypochondriacal or whatever the term would be, concerned about her health a lot. And it seems like a tradition in Zen to turn the heat up a little bit, which you say, when you say there's a sickness that results in death and there are no symptoms. So usually we rely on symptoms to give us at least the heads up that we're headed somewhere bad. So so it makes it very precarious, which I got a laugh out of. It reminded me of, I probably have it wrong, but the story of someone being chased, I forgot by what or who, and then grabs a vine and heads over the edge of a cliff and then sees tigers waiting at the bottom. Then looks up and sees a mouse, two mice nibbling at the vine. And in one recounting, there's a black mouse and a white mouse. That I like too, because the color doesn't really matter, but it's added in for some kind of a detail. But the idea of really being in a fix is a good one, I think, and maybe important.
Yeah, I think, and I think you're right, our Zen practice is about turning the heat up, so wonderful to be doing it here in the summer. but there is an urgency that we all must touch to break through the barriers of the way things are. The mind creates the world, and we're so insular. We see so little gets actually in and out. And it is by turning the heat up, or by seeing, as some of us have seen in recent days, things that we have not allowed ourselves to see before, that this urgency comes up and we're willing to head right into it. And that right into it, we discover some life, as Mike said, beyond what we could imagine. And beyond what we can grasp or even talk about. Last comment, Laura, we just have a few minutes, but you have your hand up. So
Sure, and I don't think it's a fully formed thought. And is it Doho? Is that the person?
Dao Wu.
Yeah. It just struck me, you know, when he's asked, but you are not sick, right? And he said, well, sickness or not sickness. Yeah. That somehow, that is each, I guess, right? Each Buddha who decides what is sick or not sick in their lives and taking care of that. Mm-hmm. And that I think what we're faced with, we might be faced a little bit more with it right now with the pandemic and with other things going on in the world. Oh, we have to grapple with this. Maybe we had never grappled with it before. But as you say, it's always been there. We're humans and we're going to die one day. But maybe we kind of push that back. But when you decide what is sickness for yourself and how you can take care of yourself, then you are a healer for yourself and also accepting the sickness in your, and then you can do that for others.
Yeah.
You know, there's in the sense of often we have to do some level of looking to determine what is true and to diagnose, you know, to see the symptom. You don't want to take, you know, you have a headache and, you know, the best response to a headache isn't to take NyQuil. You know, it's to take aspirin or, you know what I'm saying. You know, you want to take the appropriate medicine for the particular disease. And so there is something in this discernment that you're talking about that is very important.